Good evening, Alex, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's 7 o'clock on Monday in Geneva, and tonight's City Council meeting is called to order. I kindly ask our city clerk to please take the roll call.
Chuck Brown?
Here.
Ralph Dantino?
Here.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Here.
Sam Hill?
Here.
Dean Kilberg?
Here.
Greg Maladra?
Here.
Richard Marks?
Here.
Robert Piper? Ron Singer?
Here.
Don Vogelsberg?
We begin tonight's meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance, like we always do, and it is my high honor to recognize Ryan DiBenedetto, and he has graciously agreed to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, sir. And that, of course, is Alexander. He reminds me of you, man, when you were little. Except he's more articulate, I think. It's like, folks, we've got just a few items of business to conduct tonight, but I think it's only appropriate that we begin tonight's meeting with a moment of silence to recognize two folks. First, a young lady, the tender age of 19 years old, Emma Lee Mebben, who passed away recently in her sleep. She was laid to rest last week, and as all of you know, she leaves a family behind, and she leaves hundreds of friends. If the wake is any indication, there were hundreds upon hundreds of folks who visited her and consoled her parents and brothers and sister. And we also, of course, mourn the loss of Alderman Don Vogelsberg's mother, who passed away last week as well. So if I may, as a tribute to them both and respect to their families, just have a moment of silence. I would appreciate it. Thank you very much. Staff Sergeant Ryan DiBenedetto. You got to come up to the podium, big guy. And I warned you about this, right? No, in front would be great. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Yeah, in front of the podium. That'd be great. These photos to your left, these are you, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
That is great. Awesome. Well, we have the high honor of welcoming you home tonight.
Thank you very much.
A formal welcome home, if you will. We know you've been welcomed home already. And you are joined by your family. Would you do us the honor of introducing all these special guests who are with you?
This is my wife, Amanda, and my son, Alexander. They've been with me, you know, through most of my experiences through the military. My mother, Sue, my sister, Brianna, my grandmother.
Grandma was here early, by the way, Ryan.
Yes, she was.
Yeah. And she was wondering where you were. Apparently, the Army does not teach punctuality because...
Roger that. I actually lost something in the parking lot. Part of my uniform fell off, believe it or not.
Really?
Roger.
Yeah. Well, it's ours now.
But they've been with me through everything, and they've supported me through, you know, since I joined the military from a private all the way up to where I'm at now, through both of my deployments to Iraq for 15 months and Afghanistan. It's a tough, you know, being in the military is a tough job, and, you know, it's a very stressful life. And I'm just glad that I have a great family that can support me, and I'm very humbled and honored to be here today to, you know, stand in front of all you guys and be here and have you recognize me, because there's a lot more people that, you know, deserve recognition, and I just appreciate you guys, you know, sending me over here and giving me an award and honoring me. I appreciate that.
It's our honor. My gosh.
Very much.
We've been complaining about the heat.
Oh, right. Roger that.
Yeah, right. Roger that. Is this nearly as hot as it was for you?
Not really at all. It's really hot in Afghanistan. Iraq was a lot more difficult, you know, wearing all the weight. We have to wear, you know, 30-pound vests and rucksacks and, you know, walk for days, and it gets really hot, you know, but it's for this country, you know, that's why we do it, for, you know, the people that died for the country, so we could have freedom and, you know, help, you know, people that can't defend themselves in other countries. You know, it's just a great feeling, you know, wearing on the right, your right shoulder on uniform, the American flag, it's a great feeling. And it's the best job in the world to, you know, defend a country that's just spectacular, one of the greatest country in the world. Just, it's an honor. And I love doing it every day. You don't think about, you know, the dangers. You know, you use your train, you don't really think about that, and it's just, you just think about all the other people that gave their life for the country, and it's just such a great experience, you know, to do things for the country.
Now, you're a young man.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Very young man.
Yes.
There are men and women younger than you who are serving.
Yes.
they look up to you and reach out to you for advice and courage and strength and all that good stuff?
Yes, sir. I remember when I was a private, when I first came in and just getting on the bus to go to Iraq, you know, I didn't really know what to expect. And there are, you know, higher enlisted people, other sergeants I would go up to, you know, kind of scared and afraid, you know, because I didn't really know what to expect. And that's when I got married to my wife, Amanda. You know, it was my first deployment. I was really scared getting on that bus. I almost had a panic attack.
Really?
And then someone, you know, grabbed my shoulder and said, hey, it's going to be all right. Take it one day at a time. And I got over there, and, you know, just things went smooth. And now other soldiers, reminds me of me when I was a private. You know, they come up to me, and they're freaked out. You know, they don't know what to do. They're scared about their family, their wife leaving on them, cheating on them, you know, the usual things. So it's kind of my job as a leader to, you know, talk to those soldiers and, you know, let them know my experiences so they have a better, you know, better experience in a war zone. So.
Now, did you have a panic attack prior to the wedding?
Oh, no.
Okay.
My family did, though. I didn't.
That's right.
No one really knew about the wedding. That's.
Oh, is that right?
That's a lot of information to give out, but it was kind of a secret between me and Amanda.
Well, we won't touch on that one then.
Yeah, we won't touch on that one.
Yeeks.
But.
Mom, how are you doing? All right.
No,
I bet.
Home.
And Grandma, how are you doing?
I'm feeling great. I'm so happy.
Good. What's the one message you want to convey to those watching at home and those who will no doubt hear about you being home? I'm sure you're not going to be buying a beer all week or something, for God's sake. So
I'm not a heavy drinker. I don't drink at all. Usually.
Well, thanks for showing me up on that one, Ryan. I appreciate that.
Just don't forget about the people that are overseas and, you know, serving, giving their lives for this country. I know a lot of people don't agree with the war. And, you know, just put aside that there's young guys out there dying for this country still, you know, in the news you see it. And it's a sad experience. You know, I've personally experienced people really close to me getting killed in action. And it's very tough on the mind. And even to this day, it's very tough for me. So just support the troops out there. Even if you don't agree with the war, just, you know, try to give them as, you know, much support as you can, because it's, like I said, it's a tough job and they're giving their lives for this country and for other people that cannot protect themselves. And that's the message I want to give. Just support the troops and just remember them. Because a lot of people out there, you know, they say that, hey, a lot of the soldiers, you know, no one really cares what we're doing out here. A lot of them think that. And then we get great packages from the Fox Valley Troop Support and letters. And that makes it, you know, because you're out there and you're, you know, getting shot at. And it's a very dangerous situation, people dying. And we don't really know what's going on around here. And it's a very tough experience. But it's the people that support us, make us feel loved, and, you know, give us the motivation, the strength to keep doing the job. So it's a great country, and I love it. And I give my life for it. That's why, you know, I'm probably going to stay in for the whole 20 years, you know.
You are, or?
Most likely going to stay in.
No kidding.
20 years.
That was my next question. What's next for you?
Right now,
besides taking care of Alex and Amanda and.
Yeah, just be a good father, you know, be a good leader. I want to actually go back to the deployment. I want to go back to Iraq either or Afghanistan. And, you know, I feel like my job's not finished. So when I come home and, you know, get to be with the family, my job is still to go back. So I feel like there's unfinished business there. So I actually want to go back and do what I can, you know, and then come back here. So. It's great representing America.
Well, you're a great representative. Amazing. You know, a lot of has changed since you've been gone. We actually purchased Batavia.
He's dreaming.
I dream. Anyone on the council, any comments or questions for the staff sergeant?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Singer, yeah. Alderman Singer.
Thank you. What's your MOS?
Me, I'm a 19 Delta Cavalry Scout. A scout?
Mm-hmm.
And the unit I'm in right now, it's a special unit. And we conduct reconnaissance. We're a long-range reconnaissance unit, a LRS unit. It's actually just reinstated in the military compared to back in Vietnam, the LRP units. They just actually reinstated it in the Army, and it's actually a new thing. So that's where I'm at right now. I'm stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Thank you. Thank you for your service to our country.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Alderman Brown, then Alderman Kilberg.
Thank you.
We hear about these names and places on the news in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they don't mean much, but can you tell us a couple of towns or districts in Iraq and in Afghanistan that you've been through in your assignments?
Without giving too much information, I don't have someone here, you know, I'm not supposed to give, you know, my personal opinions on it, but I've been given experience in Iraq, a town called Balad Ruz. It's a small town in southern Diyala province, Iraq. It's very beat down, not a lot of electricity, running water. It's pretty much people living in huts, and very dangerous when I was down there, very dangerous. But that's one place that I remember.
Well, it means more to know someone who's actually been to these places, because they do seem remote, but they're real people that you're defending.
Yes, absolutely. Those people, you know, what happens is the terrorists or, you know, the Taliban, that's where they go, to remote locations. They go to those places because there's not a lot of population over there. So that's where they go for meetings. They don't want to be, you know, in the center of a city. They want to go somewhere remote. And that's where, you know, my job, I do reconnaissance, surveillance on, you know, enemy. So we'll stay on a mountaintop for a week, and we'll just watch people do raids in buildings, raids on villages. But we get most of our intelligence from the people that live in the villages. And they're very afraid to give us information for their lives. And that's where we get most of our information from, without giving too much detail.
Thank you.
Alderman Kilberg.
Ryan, I want to thank you for your service as well. Not too many years ago, I think I can remember giving you your diploma at Geneva High School. And at that time, sometimes we stress academics and accomplishments in high school, and sometimes we really don't realize that all of us in one way or another can contribute to our community and our nation in a variety of different ways. And it really, it's a sense of pride for myself and for anyone associated with your education, your parents, your family, your friends that have supported you, it really strikes home. And last week, anyone that had an opportunity to see the Medal of Honor recognition at the White House, and the young man that was recognized from New Mexico, and I'm sure it was a week of pride for anyone in the Army. His valor and how he reached within himself to do what he did was truly incredible. Only 80 Medal of Honor winners are still alive and with us today, only two since the Vietnam era. So I commend your service and anyone that served in Afghanistan or in the Middle East. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Alderman Hill.
I have a question, Mayor. Yes, Ryan, can you speak any of the local language or dialects, or do you have a translator in your recon group there?
We do have translators that are with us.
Yes.
Most of the time, the translators that are with us do, in fact, on some occasions, work for the terrorists. So it's very difficult to have a trust in the interpreters, but that's what we actually – I learned some phrases in Pashto and Arabic. I have manuals with me if I need help, but I mainly work with the special operations units in Afghanistan, Iraq, and they have American interpreters that are from America, and they're more trustworthy than the other units operating in Afghanistan and Iraq. They have just local interpreters with them.
Yeah,
I do know some phrases, and it's very helpful, and the Army's pushing more towards teaching, you know, soldiers before they deploy, you know, giving them, you know, hour-long, week-long classes on, you know, the language. They give us manuals and pamphlets about, you know, the cultural anthropology of that area, you know, what their culture is, things not to do, things to do, that they, you know, the Army's big about respect. Even though you're operating in their country, we're a big organization on respect. And they train us, and prior to deploying to that country or region, even if it's a remote, because all regions are different in the country, you know, people do different things in different areas. You know, for example, in Afghanistan, northern Afghanistan populace speaks Dari, and the southern portion speaks Pashto. And operating in different areas, there's different, you know, dialects. So it's difficult, but they give us as much, you know, tools in our tool bag to use to complete the mission. So
very good, commendable, and congratulations, and welcome home. And we're glad to have you here, and we're We're proud to have you serving for us.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Staff Sergeant, you said earlier off the camera that, and this goes directly to Alderman Kilberg's comments, that you were kind of a mischievous lad.
Yes, I was a teenager. I got into a lot of trouble.
Is this approaching any security if you share this?
No, absolutely. Go ahead. Absolutely. I got into a lot of trouble here in Geneva. I did. I was a young adult, you know, a teenager. We all have our experiences. I graduated from high school earlier than expected. I wanted a challenge. You know, I like challenge. I like danger. And I said, hey, why not join the military? I originally joined the military for the educational benefits. I wanted to be an attorney, a lawyer. Believe it or not, because I got into a lot of trouble. And, you know, everyone needs a lawyer. So I joined the Army, and then my heart changed, and I got a lot of discipline. And, you know, I saw a different aspect, a different way of life. And I met my wife, and, you know, it just brought a lot of discipline to my life. I'm doing school right now. I'm almost finished with school.
Oh, wow.
Probably going to stay in and do the officer side of the military. But, yeah, I got into a lot of trouble in Geneva. So I apologize if I hurt any of you.
No.
I apologize. Whoever's listening, I don't know where the camera is. That's why I'm, like, looking.
Directly. Yeah, I've got your file. I'll have to go through it.
So. Well, I apologize to everybody in this town for the crazy things
I
did.
I'm just giving you grief, man.
Oh, it's okay.
Water tower experience.
I'm not embarrassed at all. Everyone gets into trouble.
No, that's not that specific.
Water tower experience, fair.
But, you know, I appreciate everyone in this town. You guys are, you know, great people. Even though I got into trouble, the town ran great. The police department ran great. Everything was good. So.
The police are actually watching, by the way.
Are they really? It's crazy that I'm here today and I'm able to speak in front of you. I'm just a soldier like there are millions of other thousands of other soldiers, you know. But I'm really humbled being here today and talking to all you. It's a humbling experience, and I appreciate it.
Well, we have a proclamation, and if no one objects, I'd like to read that proclamation. And then we have a special presentation to you, okay?
I also have something for you, Mayor Burns, too.
Oh, no kidding?
Yes.
It's not your record, is it, by any chance?
No.
You don't want me to expunge that, do you?
Yes, please.
I'll just sit with my attorney, Mr. Radovich. Staff Sergeant Benedetto, City of Geneva, Illinois, proclamation. Welcoming home, U.S. Army. Staff Sergeant Ryan, which is my middle name, by the way, De Benedetto, and recognizing his service to the citizens of Geneva and the United States of America. Whereas the record of uniformed service on behalf of the United States of America by citizens of Geneva has long been an attribute of great civic pride in the history of our community, and whereas during the years of challenge that have found the United States involved in armed conflicts on foreign soil, thousands of Geneva residents have answered the call of the country and have served in the deadly struggles. And whereas in response to added challenges of fighting terrorism across the globe, Genevans by the score and now actively serving in fields of battle and armed conflicts around the world, and whereas it is the desire of the Geneva City Council to offer honorable recognition and acknowledgement to those residents who are returning from active duty in operations of battle and conflicts around the world, now, therefore, in recognition of the service to the United States of America, in which U.S. Army Staff Sergeant Ryan D. Benedetto of Geneva has recently completed, the City Council offers this proclamation of thanks and appreciation for the unfailing and selfless devotion to duty which Sergeant D. Benedetto has given in his commitment to the United States of America. So this is for you, sir.
Thank you very much.
And we also have, you talk about battle, you've got to serve on the City Council to earn the City of Geneva flag. But you, my friend,
thank you very much. It's beautiful.
A small token of our appreciation. If you fly this over your mom's house, the cops will never come. Awesome. I'm like high school. So we'll get a photo here with your mom and grandma and all that good stuff. So.
Yes. Awesome. Appreciate it.
Now
So I wanted to give this to you. This is a coin. It was awarded to me in specifics for things I did in Afghanistan. I was actually injured in Afghanistan. I had an incident and I hurt myself, and I was actually sent back to Landstuhl, Germany, 7 months into my deployment. My guy is still right now downrange in Afghanistan. I came back a little bit early to heal. I've been healing ever since. And I was given this coin, and I want to give it to you. It means a lot to me. I want to hand it down to you.
Well, this will be proudly displayed here at City Hall for all to enjoy. We'll have it appropriately framed and put it up.
Thank you all for that opportunity to recognize Staff Sergeant DiBenedetto. I mean, he looks 16 years old, doesn't he? Amazing.
Yeah, he does.
Just incredible.
How old is he, actually?
Well, he graduated in 2006, so what would that make him, 20?
23?
That early.
5 years, yeah, 23.
Amazing. Yeah. Wow. Just amazing. Okay, well then, we move on to item 3B, which is to recommend the mayor's appointment to the Cultural Arts Commission. You should have in your packet those who we are recommending.
So move.
Second.
Motion by Alderman Singer, seconded by Alderman Maladra. A voice vote is sufficient. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Anyone opposed? No abstentions. Let the record show that 7 affirmative votes carries the day. Thank you. Item 3C, Department Report Presentation. The Honorable Chief Steve Olson is here with the report on the fire department.
Nothing in my packet.
And Chief, yes.
We didn't get anything in our packet about who was.
Yeah.
Oh, you did not?
No.
I don't see it.
No.
In the back.
Mary, do you?
Well, I didn't.
Do you know the list of people?
We'll postpone that till the next meeting and have a special consideration.
No, I never saw it.
If no one objects, we'll.
Well, at least you could announce the names. Because
well, I know the one name is Mrs. Tkach, who could not be with us this evening. Mm-hmm. She is actually in New York at a very special event. And the other name escapes me right now. I apologize. Mm-hmm. So, I thought they were in the packet.
I seem to remember
not
seeing
really.
Their name
no.
somewhere.
No, sir.
Were they in a letter, an email, maybe?
No.
We'll correct that next Monday night. Through the committee meeting, special counsel. Chief, welcome.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. About 2 years ago, when I was made on the initial department presentations, we talked about some of the data analysis that we do with the department. And a lot of that had to do with the development of our standard of cover document, which is in front of you now. It was in development at that time for its third edition. And tonight I want to go over just some of the parts of it very quickly and also talk about the peer assessor site visit that we hosted 6 weeks ago in the latter part of May for our third site visit to determine if we can be accredited for the next 5 years. As I go through, if there's any questions or anything, feel free to stop me. One of the things that we look at in the basis of our operations and how we deploy our resources is risk. We really try to identify the risk that's in the community and how we manage it and what type of resources we need to address that. And so some of this is going to be a little bit of review for 2 years ago just to get us a starting off point. By risk analysis, we know that we have 8,570 occupancies in the city, And the majority of those are what we call low hazard. That'd be single-family residences, R1 through R4 classification. But the majority of our incidents are single-family residence related, mostly EMS in nature and along that line. And then we have moderate, high, and maximum hazard. Actually, maximum hazard is one of our smallest sections. And you might remember this earlier. This is after we've evaluated what the risk is and how many occupancies there are, we place them into, using GIS, we place them into a map that's color-coded to identify what the hazard is. And this is in the book that you've got there. And it identifies the 42 inspection districts that we have in the city. We use that for data analysis. And it shows that where our high hazard is, not the maximum, but our high hazard, it makes it stand out more so you can have a good assessment of where our hazards are. As an example, if you're looking at it in a more of a real-time picture, it'll look like something like this, and that's our downtown area. It's an area that's got a lot of older structures, not sprinklered, no fire alarms in them. Not all of them. Some of them don't, but a number of them do, and we've been fortunate in the downtown area to get several of the larger buildings sprinkled over the years, and that makes a big difference for us. Then you go, and this is what it looks like. The downtown looks like close up with the, when you look at the hazard map and you bring it up closer, and you'll see that there's a number of buildings there that are high hazard, and then there's a more going down South Street. It's more moderate high hazard. Now, along with that, we have commercial hazards, which is, this is obviously the south end of 3rd Street. That'd be Dotson Place. That's considered a higher hazard because of its density and its use. Along with that, we have education, such as the Geneva High School. And then, of course, we have industrial, which this is Millard Refrigeration and Power Packaging out on Pillsbury Drive. And finally, we have places of assembly, such as Cougar Stadium, or King County Event Center, actually. It has crowds of up to 8,000 people. And what we're going to talk about tonight, what I'm going to show you a little bit, it has to do with structure fires. The Cougar Stadium obviously is not as much as a fire hazard as an EMS, because you have a large concentration of people in a close area, and if we're going to get something that's significant, it's probably going to be more EMS related. Now with that, we show this to you every month in the monthly packet, which is actually a monthly report that's in this tonight's packet, but this looks at 2010 incidents. And it shows where we had the highest concentration of calls all of last year. So obviously, clearly, the downtown and 3rd Street are busier for us, but also are the age-restricted facilities and care facilities. Age-restricted, such as the Reserve out on Keeneville Road, Geneva Place down here, 25 and State, Arden Court. And of course, the hospital gives us a fair amount of requests for service also. You can see those as they all play out. Then it gets lesser. As the area becomes more red, that's a higher intensity or higher use. And this looks at the trend from 2009 to 2010. Where it's red is where the calls have increased with relation to what the calls were in 2009. Where it's green is where it's gone down. So you can sort of see a shifting from year to year of the calls as they pass through. This we do on a monthly basis. When we send you this in the monthly report, it's showing the current month to the month 12 months previous. This is just showing year to year. So it's now here's the part. Once we've looked at what the hazard is, we have to identify what the resources are that we need. And again, we're talking about structure fires, but as in part of our analysis, we do this with EMS, hazmat, and technical rescue. And technical rescue has gotten to be a much larger all-encompassing term now than it was 10 years ago when it first started. And I have something. There we go. When we talk about a lot of people, when they talk about fire departments or response, they're thinking, how quickly does it take you? How long does it take you to get there? That's the question they ask us. And typically, they're thinking of what the time the first vehicle is to get there. And that's what we call the initial response. But along with that, in a structure fire, we have what's called effective response force. And that is the number of people and resources we need to get the basic critical functions done at the initial time that we arrive on the scene. And that can be anywhere from 5 to 8 minutes is that window that we look at there, 5 to 10 minutes. And so for us, an effective response force is 18, as you see here. And the skills or the tasks that have to be taken care of is initial attack line, a backup line, a line is a hose, a fire hose, supply line, which is water from the hydrant to the pumper, and then shutting off the utilities, search and rescue in the structure, pump operations, which means operating as the water comes into the engine, it's got to be pumped out, and we have to have somebody there who's trained to operate it. Ventilation, the best way to protect the victim or to increase the survivability is to get the smoke and heat out of the building. So that's why you see windows coming open, you'll see holes cut in roofs. All that is to get the heat and smoke out of the building. Rapid intervention team is a group of firefighters who are detailed solely for the rescue of firefighters who become trapped or lost in a structure. And they go into action when a mayday is called. These three individuals plus an officer are charged with the responsibility of entering the structure and finding those people who have caught the mayday. So we have that set up. It's built into the response called rapid intervention team. Next, you have incident command, which is not always me. It can be a lieutenant on the engine. It can be the first ambulance on the scene, and the paramedic can take command. We train the people to do that. A lot of times when a chief officer pulls up, a younger officer will say, please, I help me out here. Safety, we have a safety officer that responds to all incidents, anything in a structure fire. Severe vehicle accidents with extrication, the safety officer is there. Hazmat, tech rescue, we have safety. And then EMS are the medics. Now, the paramedics in Geneva are cross-trained as certified firefighters. If we do not have an immediate need for them in EMS capacity, we will put them to work as part of the firefighting attack crew. And that's a judgment made by the incident commander based on the situation on hand. If we know going in that we're getting reports that we're going to be effecting rescues, then we will take them out of the attack mode and put them into the mode of treating the victims when they're retrieved, then we bring in more ambulances at the same time. Altogether, that's 18 people. And we have to have them there within the 9 minutes. Now, how does that figure or compare to what we do with the levels of risk that I showed you in the map just a little bit ago? Remember, we had low, medium, high, and maximum. Well, in this instance, the initial response, the effective response force, is 18, but we have additional companies that come in behind them, but they take longer. So they're not part of the initial 9 minutes that we're looking for. So in total, we're looking for 21 at low hazard, 23 at moderate hazard, 35 for high hazard, and 36 to 43 for maximum hazard. Now, quickly, you look at, well, what's the daily staffing in the fire department? Well, when no one's off on vacation or ill, it's 10. That's what we shoot for. Obviously, there's a difference there in the amount of staffing that we have on duty to what the task level is required. And that's where automatic aid and mutual aid come into effect. Automatic aid are companies that are dispatched at the same time as we are for the initial response. So that's why you could see, if you're in Randall Square, you might see a Batavia engine and a Geneva engine sitting outside your home, or a Batavia ambulance and a Geneva engine, or a St. Charles ambulance and a Geneva engine. When it goes beyond that, we go into mutual aid. Those are what we call a box alarm, and we can take that up to 5 levels and then go even higher than that. Those resources take longer to respond. They'll take anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes, depending on travel distance, because each alarm goes out further from the community. So the initial alarm, the initial effective response force comes from the Tri-Cities, but then the box alarm will come from West Chicago and North Aurora and South Elgin and Sugar Grove, and then after that it goes to Wheaton and Winfield, and it just goes out in concentric circles, if that makes sense. So each alarm goes further out to bring resources in, but then it takes longer for those resources to come in. And as they come in, the incident commander has to work them into the ongoing operations on the fire ground, on the incident scene, along with the companies they already have. So it becomes a meshing of moving personnel in and out, controlling where they are. Now, when we talk about effective response force and such, we look at that hard after every structure fire. and this is one that we had a couple years ago. And this is a report that we will generate, and it breaks out every resource that responded and the number of people that responded. So in this instance, it was on Eastside Drive. You can see the first unit arrived in 54 seconds. That's because it was about three blocks down from the station. But it took us overall 6 minutes and 33 seconds to develop the effective response force, which in this particular instance was very good. We're looking, our goal for our objective for effective response force is 9 minutes. Our objective for initial responding unit that can take action is 6 minutes and 30 seconds. Those are objectives that we measure. We do that after every incident. We do it monthly. So how does that break down for in terms of data? Well, in structure fires, as you know, what I've got up here now, this is a summation of response times from 2006 through 2010. And if you look at the column right down in the middle that says it starts with 10, that's for last year, our initial total response time for first unit on the scene is 5 minutes and 25 seconds for 90% of the responses. Again, we're looking for 6 minutes and 30 seconds. Now, the total response time for the effective response force, which are those 18 people that we talked about, is about 8 minutes and 47 seconds for 90% of the incidents that we responded to. We don't use averages anymore. We use fractals. Because if you're using what the average is, well, then 50% of the incidents are more than what you're saying, and 50% are less. It's not as accurate, so we look at 90% is what we said internally, and actually was adopted by the council 10 years ago when we first started accreditation. In fact, the initial standard recovery document you're seeing now was first approved by the council in 2001. This is, as I said, the third edition. Now, what is the response time in a fires? I'll show you a quick video here. Let's hope this works. What you're seeing is a video of what was a simulated cigarette that was dropped next to a couch. This actually is very close to a fatal fire that we had here in Geneva about 8 years ago. Careless use of smoking materials. When a fire starts in a home, when an incident occurs, it has to be found. That's the first thing. The delay in finding that incident are valuable seconds. And so for a fire to start, it has to be large enough for somebody to find it, and that can be anywhere from a minute and a half, even with smoke detectors in there. If we were talking about a cardiac arrest victim, they have 4 to 6 minutes before we need to restart their circulation or help their circulation through CPR, cardiac defibrillation, and the like. That time clock is just as critical to them as is in a structure fire like you're looking at right now. So we're at minute 7, and the flames are already off the side of the couch, and they're moving up into other parts of the room. As the call is announced, say somebody finds it, sees there's a fire, they go to call the 911. 911 will take anywhere from 60 to 75 seconds to get the information from them. Sometimes longer if the person can't get out the information, frequently shorter. They in turn dispatch the responding units. Again, in Geneva's case, they dispatch all four fire departments, Batavia, Geneva, St. Charles, and Elbert. That takes about another 40 seconds. It takes the initial responding vehicle 60 seconds to get out of the building. Already we're at a minute 49 on the screen, and you can see how far it gets. Time is critical to us. And so everything that we look at now is how that we can we shorten that time down. Now, once the room gets smoke charged like this, what happens is the fire is heating up the smoke or the gases in it to the point it ignites, just like it did right there. Once it ignites or flashes over like that, it'll cross the room, it takes out the rest of the furnishings, and then from there it spreads down into the rest of the house. We call this a room of contents fire. This is just one section of the data of the information I presented to you tonight, and it's a very quick review of it. But that's how this all ties together when we look at our response and the resources that we send. Now, talking about the peer assessment team that came in, they were here in May. They came from Missouri, Tennessee, Colorado, and Iowa. There were four evaluators. They came in and were spent 4 days with us, came in on a Sunday, they left the following Thursday. And in that time, they reviewed our material, they looked at our documents, one of which, two of which you have in front of you there. And then from there, they interviewed a myriad of people both in the department. They met with Ms. Dawkins, Ms. McKittrick, Dan Dinges, several people throughout the community, within the city for specific things that we needed to, that were critical to the department, such as water supply, public works, human resources, governments and administration. Those are all different parts of it. Overall, we have to demonstrate that we comply with, at the minimum, 82 what are called core competencies. These are statements that we have to comply with in order to be considered a credible agency, bare minimum. After that, they look at another 253 what are called performance indicators, which are elements within that we have to respond to as part of that. This is all done internally by our staff. It's not done with an outside consultant. It's not done with any, it's done by our own processes. We've ingrained this into our operations, so we do this on a regular basis. Now, after the team completed, they're going to recommend us for reaccreditation, and that will go to the full commission in August for consideration. In the meantime, they made 9 recommendations. That's what I want to conclude with here. I'm going to go over each of the recommendations. First, they want us to formalize the annual review of the fire prevention, public education, fire investigation programs. We review these now. It's often done on a monthly basis. It's usually between the program manager and myself in my office. Sometimes it might be standing out in the apparatus floor, but we touch base frequently. What they are suggesting and recommending is that we formalize this more so that it's documented more fully. And so what we're going to do is, we've already started, is we've rolled it into our monthly staff meetings. And then the entire staff, the command staff, will be involved in it. And it'll be a quick review of each program. It will just be done on a monthly basis. Those will be done annually, pardon me. Next recommendation is establish guidelines and annual harassment awareness and prevention training. We hadn't done that in a while. We've already started this particular recommendation. We're about two-thirds of the way through with it. By the end of this month, everybody in the department will have gone through training for retraining, review and refresher. I want to emphasize that. They've been trained once before, but it's refresher training on harassment awareness and prevention. Next is continue to work with the water department, identify areas of improvement water distribution system. We've worked with the water department, public works, for many years. We do flow testing. We flow test a third of the system every year now, and we provide that data to them, and we work with the staff out there to identify areas that over long term that may need might be eligible for improvement. The next one is provide annual competency training for all personnel training technical rescue awareness. We actually do this. And this is a different interpretation part of the assessors, but frankly, we understand what they're telling us, and that is that we do technical rescue training on twice a year department-wide. But in the fire service, training is broken down into awareness, operations, and technician. Those are the three levels. Awareness is at the beginning. Awareness is training the person to know when they shouldn't do anything. Call for help. That's what awareness training is. We do that, but we're going to change the way that it's termed, and we're going to change the objective slightly. And it's once again, we'll have that completed. Next one is train all personnel minimum hazmat ops level, like I just told you, awareness operations technician. We have nearly 90% of the staff trained in operations, so we have a few that we have to address. That's a 40-hour course to do that. Update standard operating guidelines for personnel designated to perform mission-specific responsibilities in hazmat incidents. There's been a change in the federal standard for how incidents are classified, and our standard operating guidelines don't mirror that exactly, so they asked us to change that. That has been completed. Establish nutritional physical fitness based on education program for employees. We have fitness equipment at both stations. We've been working on nutritional part of it with the assistance of HR, and now we're looking at possibly working with a public-private partnership to bring in people to help address that. The number one cause of firefighter fatality is heart attack, stroke, and stress-related. And if we can take measures to address that, it would be good for the health of the employee, certain for their career, but also for the community-wide. Establish a wellness business committee consisting of cross-section employees to assist in continued development evaluation of the program. We have not started that, but we will in the next year. And finally, ensure that mid-level supervisors are successfully complete the Incident Command System, also known as NIMS 300, National Incident Management System, course with the Department of Homeland Security. We have three of the six officers, three are scheduled to take this training in September. And then we'll get the next three next spring. So we'll have that completed by next May. So we're on our way to addressing these. A couple are going to take us a little longer, but all of these recommendations will get rolled into our strategic plan, and then as we can develop them through the budget process, you, the members of the council, will see that in the annual budget presentation. And that's how we've addressed our strategic plan over the last 10 years. Well, I remember Alderman Dakota early on saying, well, how much will all this cost? I'm sure you can find it hard to believe he asked that question. And the answer was, is it gets rolled into the annual budget approval process, and it's vetted out by the city administrator in conjunction with me, and then it goes to you for consideration. So we chuck it down in a little bits, and over time it does come through, and you see parts of it. And that's it.
Thank you, Chief. Any questions or comments for the Chief regarding the presentation? Alderman Marks.
Chief, the comments that they made, were you expecting some of those? I mean, they always make some. They have.
A couple of them were. A couple of them caught us off guard, and that was fine. That's what the whole process is about.
But most of them you knew were there and were working
on
it.
Our evaluation had told us we've got a problem here. Okay. And that's part of going through this. It helps you find your weak points.
That's what I figured. Okay. Thank you.
Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Will you get reaccredited after you go through the recommendations in August?
Yes. Well,
you can't get everything done in August, according
to... No. They don't expect... Actually, we have 5 years to accomplish this.
Oh, okay. So but, you do have 5 years.
Yeah, but we're not... I'm not one to let things lie. Yeah. I like to get to them quick.
5 years is a long time. They might change by that time, too.
Yeah. A lot of things could change in the next 5 years.
Thank you.
Cheshire cat look. Alderman Singer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Chief, do they use a grading level for your accreditation?
There is, but it's not shared with the agency. The team has it, and then they submit it to the commission, and the commission has access to it, but we will not. We just know that they're going to recommend it.
Is this then something that reflects the homeowners insurance for our residencies?
No, that would be the Insurance Services Office, ISO, it's called. And it's difficult for homeowners to see a big change unless you're talking about, for those of you unfamiliar with ISO, it goes from a class 1 to a class 9, which essentially is unrated. There is not a fire department. We are a class 3. When you move from one class level to the next, there's not a lot of change, but if, for example, you're at a 5 and you go to a 3, there's a change, and that's what happened to us several years ago. We went from 5 to 3. And so then there was adjustment, but because a homeowner's policy, it's a collection of different types of coverages. Besides fire, you've got liability, somebody slipping on your walk, storm damage, and so it gets sort of lost in that. Commercial tends to see it more readily because they tend to break it out in that policy. So, but no, for accreditation, no, it does not affect that. But what has happened is the Insurance Services Organization has now recognized that accreditation is is something that is mutually compatible with what they do, and they're now allowing departments that are accredited to have additional points added to their score, because in ISO they give you so many points. And it depends on how many points you have, how what your score is to what your class rating is. So you can get credit for being being accredited gets applied to your ISO rating. I hope I explained that.
Yeah, thank you, Chief. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else? Anyone from the audience? Questions for the august chief? Thank you, Chief, very much. And thank you for the work you and your team did on the Lenciano Memorial. Item number four, amendments to the agenda. Are there any amendments this evening? Apparently, Marks wants to go. Item five is the omnibus agenda. All items marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine and can be enacted by one motion.
So moved.
Motion by Alderman Dantino, seconded by Alderman Hill. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Dean Kilberg.
Aye.
Greg Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Motion passes with 7 affirmative votes. Correction, 8 affirmative votes, 2 absent. Item number 10, municipal bills for payment. Mr. Clerk, kindly read the bills for consideration.
Bills for payment total $685,034.78.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve and pay the bills as read, and the individual bills are displayed on the city website in the city package.
Second.
Alderman Brown makes a motion to pay the bills as read and display it on the city's website. Alderman Flanagan makes the second. Questions or comments? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Dean Kilberg.
Aye.
Greg Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Motion passes with 8 affirmative votes, 2 absent. We jump to item 11A. There is a slight change in the motion to be considered. I will read the motion, then invite someone to make the motion and the second. Item 11A should read, move to approve a disputed settlement agreement in the amount of $20,000, including a Section 8J agreement as full and final settlement of the Philip Affrontes workers' compensation claim.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion by Hill, seconded by Maladra. Questions or comments for Mrs. Dawkins? The roll call is Alderman Brown.
I presume the extension of the motion is just to make very specific exactly the.
That's correct. There was a placeholder.
No change from what we heard in the.
That's correct.
In the description. Thank you.
A roll call is in order. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Dean Kilberg.
Aye.
Greg Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Motion passes with 8 affirmative votes and 2 absent. Item 11B is to recommend ordinance number 2011-35, authorizing issuance of general obligation refunding bonds for the electric system alternate revenue source in the aggregate principal amount not to exceed $13 million and calling for a public hearing on September 6, 2011.
So moved.
Sorry, before you make that motion, okay. Sir, the public hearing was changed to August 15th.
August 15th.
Oops, my apologies, August 15th, 2011. With that note, Alderman Marks makes the motion to approve.
Yes.
Second.
Seconded by Alderman Maladra. Any questions or comments? This, of course, is good news. Mm-hmm. A roll call is in order. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Dean Kilberg.
Aye.
Greg Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Motion passes with 8 affirmative votes and 2 absent. Mm-hmm. We jump down to item 13, new business. Anyone from the council? New business tonight.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Kilberg.
Thank you. Just one observation. Looking through the packet and looking at the state sales tax receipts, I think sometimes the community would be interested sort of a benchmark on how the economy here in Geneva is doing compared to probably one of, you know, our highest year, our best year as far as sales tax receipts, as well as how we're comparing to last year. And I took a little analysis of this, and the receipts actually lag by, what, 2 or 3 months from the month that they were actually received. But if we look at February of 2011, we're at 81% of our highest year over the last 13 years. That was 06-07. And we're at 94% compared to last year, 2010. That'd be February. And we did have a few snowstorms in February. And mm-hmm. in light of that, 94% probably isn't all that bad. March, and those receipts were received in June. Compared to our greatest year, or our best year over the last 13 years, 07, 08, we're at 87%. And we're at 104% of last year, which is encouraging. And July's receipts, which were for April of 2010, we're at 87% of our best year over the last 13 years. That was 07-08 at 87%. And compared to last year, we're 99%. So there are some encouraging signs here. And obviously, business in Geneva is important. And I thought that maybe there may be some members of the community that would find that interesting.
Well said.
And encouraged to buy Geneva.
That's right.
Thank you very much. Anyone else from the dais or the audience? If not, a motion to adjourn is in order.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Alderman Singer, seconded by Alderman Hill. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The meeting is adjourned.